The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Welcome, listener. It's time for drawing for episode 43 of The Big Red Couch. This week we're employing science!
Huh, alright.
What hath science wrought?
Don't know if you're going to be able to read it.
They Fight Crime, http paulm.com toys, theyfightcrime.html, from Taz.
So, I'm not 100% sure how we do this one.
That's part of the challenge, I guess.
Pretty much, the website in question is basically an automated, randomized lookup table. So you get things like, he's an undead detective, she's a time-traveling pie, they fight crime.
Looking forward to seeing that in action.
Right. Fighting crime, obviously.
See ya.
Some days later.
Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 43 of The Big Red Couch. On the microphone today, we have, from the manor,
Ben.
And here at the Big Red Couch recording studio, Craig. That's actually it. Tonya is still unwell, and Kevin is still beset by howling mobs of students.
So it's just the two of us again.
Just us.
All right.
We're sorry about that, listener. We really are. We're doing the best we can.
Indeed, in these dark times.
Yes, these times of woe and universal brouhaha, as Tom Lehrer put it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Anyway, our prompt for today came from Taz, and is They Fight Crime. There is a website, which I'll link in the show notes. And, yeah, basically the website gives you the description of a couple of people who fight crime. I had gone there and hit the button to get my random prompt and got... He's an unconventional arachnophobic senator on his last day on the job. She's a psychotic gypsy archaeologist who can talk to animals. They fight crime!
And you did something with this.
I did, but I think people should hear your one as well.
All right, okay. The Pearl script, I think it's a Pearl script, spat out. He's a gunslinging hunchback vampire hunter with a secret. She's a time-traveling winged snake charmer with an MBA from Harvard. They fight crime!
Hmm. We did have a bit of a discussion before we started recording on whether he's a... hunchback who hunts vampires, or whether he is a hunter who happens to be hunchbacked and is a vampire.
Is vampire hunter hyphenated?
No.
Since it's not hyphenated, that kind of implies that he hunts vampires, or the other one.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's not important.
I don't know. I know somebody who teaches English courses. I could go and ask him, but not right now.
You could also ask the same question about the other side of the equation, if you're dealing with a charmer who is a winged snake, rather than a snake charmer who specializes in winged snakes.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's just confusing.
Well, it's possible that we're just trying to distract ourselves from what we're trying to do. Because I know that's what I'm doing.
Okay. So you came up with as much idea as I did?
I came up with something. I was basically just looking at unconventional arachnophobic senator on his last day on the job, psychotic gypsy archaeologist who can talk to animals, they fight crime. And just thinking of it from the point of view of a game, that this prompt and yeah, the they fight crime stuff in general works really well with two-person plus GM games. That's a fantastic setup for those. For this particular one, I would go with a plot of the psychotic gypsy archaeologist who can talk to animals has stumbled onto something. Yeah, I would go with something along the lines of big construction project happening, huge thing, and there's a really important archaeological site right in the way of it, the existence of which has been hushed up. The senator on his last day on the job has been, unbeknownst to the senator themselves, guided out of their job because they're precisely the sort of person who's going to make a huge amount of stink about this, and the project is worth sufficient millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars that... you've got sort of corporate corruption and possibly the mob is involved. And yeah, I can see this one. If it was a movie, it would be the sort of thing that occurs over, the entire plot occurs over 1 or 2 days. It's one of those sort of tense, compact time frame where all of a sudden this person who's on the verge of retiring suddenly discovers why that and why they were pushed out and leaps into action and tries to gather the evidence, this kind of thing.
While he still has access and will be taken seriously. Now, of course, since he's arachnophobic and she's an archaeologist, it's going to be some sort of temple of an ancient spider cult. It's going to be waiting to be broken open.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
whether I don't know whether I'd go Indiana Jones, Supernatural, or even Critters, or whether it's just the fact that the site itself is just covered with enormously realistic pictures of spiders.
Well, it's got to come up in some way. And either, yeah, maybe the spider cult, maybe the place is just, you know, covered with depictions of spiders enough to make the senator's job a lot more difficult.
Possibly it's just also covered with spiders.
True.
Yeah, that, actual spiders.
Constructed entirely out of spiders. Which would give the archaeologist conniptons as well. So,
So that's where I would go with that one. Just
so specifically, what is it about the they fight crime that makes the dynamic duo setup? I suppose what
dynamic duo is where I was going with it. That okay. I have run in the past a few two person games, sort of multi session games. If you pick the wrong system, I found it really didn't work.
Well. But the shorter the game, the less time you've got to buy into a complex system. Unless you're completely au fait with it to start with, you don't want to just sort of jump in for a quick game of Rollmaster or something like that. Some games explicitly...
Is that even an option?
Not really. some games explicitly start you off at drooling mouth breather and put you on the slow escalator ride to godhood. So just starting flat-footed at the beginning level character and going, yes, let's try and accomplish something. Isn't how it's done. So that's an aspect you've got to look out for, of course.
I was thinking more from games that have, and I will lunge wildly for dear old second edition AD&D in this one.
Okay.
Games that have some very heavily defined role.
Yes, definitely.
I discovered a party that doesn't have all of those roles means the GM has to be a little bit careful about what scenarios they come up with, or the party needs to be a whole lot clever about how they approach things.
Yeah, a lot of the traditional, you know, role-based stuff means that you can't tackle a generic adventure that's set up for those roles, because you will suddenly go, hey, who can pick locks? No one here.
No one.
It's like, yeah. No one. Yeah, they've got a bit more freeform these days.
And
a lot of game systems are pretty freeform, but it also means that two players might mean that just arbitrarily, who can pick locks? I can tap dance. Okay, close enough.
Yeah, awesome. We will tap dance our way through the scenario. That'll work, right?
Yeah.
I can use my pastry chef skill on this hacking job, can't I? Yeah, but in any case, I have done some two-person games, and they were interesting to run, and I hope interesting to play in, because you get quite a lot of player-character interaction, just because you can't really take a back seat at any point. It's very obvious.
That's true. You can't fall back on that. And yeah, if you split the party, it's pretty freaking obvious that someone hasn't got anything to do.
Yes.
So yeah, that does kind of shape the kind of adventure you're going to have. If you have something that has a fairly defined genre, fighting crime, it's not the most defined genre, but there is fairly easy to cover the major aspects of it with the two characters.
Hmm.
So if you go with a traditional urban detective kind of thing, or a like superhero crime-fighting duo, you don't have to go completely crazy trying to cover all of your bases. Or you could use just a extremely flexible narrative-based system and just, you know, literally tap dance through the entire adventure.
That nearly worked in Hudson Hawk.
Very, very nearly.
Actually, in this context, would Hudson? Yeah, no, Hudson Hawk would count for at least chunks of it as a crime. Well,
It's kind of a heist film.
It's a heist film, but it's also a stopping the bad guys kind of film. Oh, yeah. It kind of falls into both categories.
Well, he was supposed to carry out the heist for the bad guys, but he was all ambivalent about it. So there's something I'd like to expand upon about the whole they fight crime thing. As far as scenarios go, it has lots of advantages. Specifically, like, you've got a definite goal. Crime is here, you fight it. It's very easy for the players to say, well, look, we're in a glorious sandbox with everything going on, but looky here, there are bad guys doing bad things that we want to stop. And it clears out a lot of the, oh goodness, what's going on, confusion, and is a good way to sort of focus party on doing specific goals. And it has the advantage that you're morally justified in doing these things. Rather than being your professional home invader and genocide purveyor, kick in the door, commit burglary. You've got
an aura of righteousness.
Indeed. I don't know. Being an orc might be defined as a crime in some worlds. But clearly there is some justification for what you're doing. Even if you are out in the shady outskirts of vigilantism, you're doing a thing that is good. And you can play with that as much as you like, but it's nice and justified, and you've got, you know, a little bit of moral high ground before wading into the bloody swamps of homicide or indeed, whatever. So that's something that I found when running catch the criminal or untangle the mystery sorts of adventures is really useful. Another good thing about the fighting crime thing is that, as I said, there's mystery involved. It's built in.
Mm.
Either you don't know who committed the bad things, or you know who did the bad things, but you don't know where they are precisely right now, and if you could find that out, you could enact justice in whatever form it takes. And yeah, those are nice, clear paths, but they don't feel... they're easier to not have them feel as contrived or as circumscribed as possible. And yeah, as far, on this sort of the continuum from the players are stopping crimes, to say as are committing crimes, not just assuming that dungeon crawls are vandalism and burglary.
Well, at the very least, trespass.
Trespass, yes. But actually, you know, you're playing, if you're actually playing heist games and so forth, they can be very open-ended, and the players can do pretty much whatever they like. Trying to foil another mysterious group actually gives you something to focus on, which I think is pretty handy sometimes.
True. I have been musing over the Hunchback Vampire Hunter with a Secret and the time-traveling winged snake charmer.
Well, I'm already convinced that his secret is that he's an accountant, and possibly he is this sharp-ass, Wesley Snipes-esque, Coolio vampire hunter by night and is famous. His day job is an incredibly embarrassing accountancy thing, which actually supports his lifestyle.
Interesting. I was kind of imagining it as sort of setting it in the Old West. I haven't quite decided. I think in this case he's a hunchbacked vampire who is supporting himself by hunting. Wearing clothing entirely made from the outside of animals, mountain man kind of figure.
Huh.
Who has teamed up with some sort of winged person who is clearly from the future, because I'm not sure that the Masters of Business Administration existed in the 1800s.
I'm sure it was on the way. I'm confident it was a coming thing. Okay, so she is actually...
Oh, yes, it occurred... The we're talking about the past, and the thing exists in the present, so yes, by definition, it was a coming thing.
Well, yeah.
That's how chronology works.
So you just decided that she's a winged snake charmer, not a winged snake charmer.
Indeed. She charms regular snakes. She has wings.
Wings. Right.
He is a hunchback who is a vampire who hunts things.
Okay.
And is a gunslinger, which presumably being a vampire helps in that regard. Possibly being a hunchback helps as well, because you're a little bit shorter than I expect.
Interesting. Ah, maybe his secret is that his heart is in the hunch.
Ah.
So somebody dramatically stakes him in the front, which is difficult anyway.
And absolutely nothing happens.
Okay, that would be pretty weird. So
very funny.
Indeed. At least once. So they're roaming around the West while she is apparently some flying, technologically advanced snake charmer who's got a degree in business administration.
Yeah.
I could see a natural interplay between these characters. I'm struggling to see how business administration will help in the situation, but I don't think
it helps at all. I think the MBA exists purely as a motivator, that she's gone and she's gotten her MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably from, yeah, this is, she's from our future as well. So the wings, in fact, may be some sort of deployable nanotechnological thing.
So she's a cybernetic snake charmer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's gotten her MBA and then discovers that actually she really hates business administration, or possibly was doing business... Actually, no, she was doing business administration for a time travel experimental project, got caught up when something went wrong, and found herself in the Old West.
Ah.
See, so the story hangs together beautifully.
I'm not going to go as far as beautifully. I'd say it hangs. But that could be intriguing, though. Yeah, I could take a bit of work. It would be a very odd couple thing.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because I have actually done real role-playing in recent times. The Shadow... Yes, I got to play a bit of Shadowrun, which, interestingly enough, is a two-person odd couple team, a pair of dojo associates. Sifu is a physical adept elf who is a slobby slacker, obsessed with old tri-D martial arts films, impulsive, bit of a head case, but fairly trustworthy, while his student is an ex-corporate orc security consultant who is making his way back into the world after being burnt on a previous assignment.
Literally or figuratively?
Mostly literally.
Okay.
So Oh, yes. And they...
Yeah, they fight crime. Well, actually, no, they cause crime.
They cause crime.
They perpetrate crime.
It's Shadowrun. The legality of the situation is very vague at best of times. Yes.
Which edition?
Was 5th, I believe.
Wow, that to 5th. I am so out of touch with Shadowrun.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're using house rules from 2nd as well.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. There's lots of dice involved.
Well, that's Shadowrun.
Yeah, I am building biceps rolling fistfuls of dice.
Yeah, I believe there is a rule in there that if the scenario really isn't going your way, you can just peg dice at the GM until he relents. It was in one of the supplements somewhere.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure if anyone is physically unable to pick up all of their dice they're rolling, the action succeeds immediately.
Like it. Nice.
Yep.
And gives you an incentive to buy really cool metal dice.
True. Okay.
Very large metal dice.
Okay. So, no, I quite like that notion, the idea of the scouring the Wild West, walking the land, like Kung Fu, to find a way, I don't know, what's in it for the vampire? What's in it for this mountain man? But, you know, maybe the time-traveling snake charmer wants to find a way to be, say, frozen and shipped back to the future.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, maybe it's deliberate. Maybe she's uncovered this nefarious nest of shell corporations. But if she goes back to get the original documentation to prove that these companies are one and the same thing... She can sort of uncover this conspiracy in the future.
So a 200 or 300 year old or year long conspiracy.
Yep.
Like it. Well, that can get the vampire involved as well, because at that point he can't really say, well, how is it my problem? Sort of, you're a vampire. It's not your problem now, but in 300 years it will be.
Interesting.
You'll still be around.
Huh. Could be a tense thing. It's like, okay, so what are you trying to do? And why haven't I set up this conspiracy? Because that would be really in my favour.
It could be a very unpleasant conspiracy. You know, it could be the...
Yeah, something that's anti-vampire, at the very least.
Oh, possibly. Yeah, I mean, possibly if you've got time travel as a possibility. Maybe it's a conspiracy to secretly buy up through various shells places that will have immense, you know, immense resource value in the future. And they've just been quietly sitting on this for the planet to sit on it for hundreds of years to not actually change the timeline, and then in their own time, suddenly do the ha-ha, we owned it all along, moo-hoo-ha-ha-ha, give us all your money.
Indeed.
Hmm. Maybe not the moo-hoo-ha-ha. I don't think that sort of thing gets put into legal briefs.
No.
Could be wrong.
So it is insider trading...
On a massive scale.
Yeah, insider trading on the basis that you set the events up before... They were going to even be started. Okay. Yeah.
Indeed. And then conceal that fact from everybody to avoid mucking up the timeline.
Hmm. Because otherwise it would just be part of the timeline. You wouldn't have actually gotten any useful information.
Yeah. Indeed.
Intriguing. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. We do also have, incidentally, a piece of John Tent on this one.
Oh, roll it out. I've got some more thoughts about how to run these sorts of games, but yeah.
Okay.
Chuck that into the mix.
Do the John Tent and then
bounce
back. All right, let's see if this works. All right. John said, sometime in the future, at the edge of an ocean and only distantly connected to the rest of society, is a city. In this city, life proceeds fairly normally in most respects, but when you visit, you frequently see men walking around the sidewalks to no apparent purpose. These men dress all in identical black uniforms, with black gloves and black helmets that cover their faces. They wear no insignia or identification, and rarely speak. When you ask about them, the people who live in the city can only tell you one thing. They fight crime. The citizens are not being evasive or unfriendly. The sentence, they fight crime, is all anyone knows about them. No one seems to know anyone who works for them. No one knows how you would apply to join them. No one's ever seen the tiniest patch of one's skin. No one's seen them off duty or even taking a coffee break. No one knows where their headquarters is. No one knows who pays them, if anyone. No one's sure if they're actually human. All anyone knows is that if somebody commits a crime, more often than not, some of them will show up promptly to fight them. The major problem is that nobody's quite sure what crime is. Sure, there's the obvious ones, theft and assault and murder and whatnot, but sometimes they will take exception to an activity that seems innocuous, or that everybody involved swears they've been doing for years without any problems. Every area of the city thus has its own list of strange rules, invariably discovered the hard way, and passed down by oral tradition or sometimes put on posters. A new resident moving into a neighbourhood will soon be informed of street corners on which she cannot tie her shoelaces, songs she cannot whistle between 1 and 3 p.m, and other such things. When questioned on their policies, their identities, their purpose, or the list of activities that are disallowed, they will only ever give the same answer, we fight crime.
Wow, that's unsettling on a bunch of levels.
Yeah.
The implication is that all they do is fight. They roll up and... batter
things.
It doesn't imply any incarceration or restraint. It just kind of, ooh, I throw down some loot up. Body slam!
And he just turns up and kicks the crap out of you for a bit.
Eerie. Yeah, that is...
Bits of it has shades of paranoia with, you know, the computer being desperately scared about communists but not really knowing what one is.
Yes.
But that's a bit unsettling.
Yeah, that is kind of... It's a bit like the Dark City, the folks running it not really having a clear agenda apart from screwing with folks.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure they had a reason in that one, but, you know, they just sort of... In fact, they probably did have a reason, but my memory has not furnished me with what that is. It's not super clear during the first watching of the movie. Yeah, that would be a creepy, weird game. So, it definitely seems like a commentary on the surveillance state. Thanks, John.
Yeah.
These apparently self-appointed or very least externally important protectors of law and order or possibly public decency or, you know, whistling standards.
Hmm.
And they suddenly materialize, not literally, and dispense justice with gusto.
And fists.
Gusto and fists. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure where to go for a game for that one.
Well, there is one mystery and one challenge is figuring out who they are.
Hmm. What they are doing.
Yeah, so, and yes, try and figure that out. So that could be, yeah, it could be interesting. It could be part of a remote sort of subplot in a path of adventure, especially if you were doing sort of something that was a very much a science fiction version of Elric kind of thing. You come to a bizarre city where the laws are enforced by faceless, jumpsuited individuals, and you've got to do something and try and figure out how not to get pummeled doing it.
Ah.
So you've got a particular objective, and you try and break down your objective into certain things to figure out when they will come to fight and how you can distract them or put them off.
Interesting. So it's all you're almost looking at a heist game there.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, that would be part of another. I suppose if the game is that you arrive in this strange land and you have to decode the rules and figure out what's going on. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. It reminds me a bit of the Quantum Thief book by gentlemen whose name and I will not attempt to pronounce, but the idea that the planet Mars was penal colony and it had certain very unusual rules about how much information you just let leak into the environment around you to the point that only certain people with a certain trust agreement with you could see your face. You were just kind of a silvery blur otherwise, because everything is mediated through machines and technology.
Ah.
So that could be that kind of thing, because that was a book which had a world which was full of rules that the narrative were not explained until they came up. And you'd kind of go, well, that's weird. I think I get what's going on. Okay. And you kind of have to build your own understanding of how the world functioned. So yeah, that could be a really interesting... It's more of a puzzle than anything, but...
It's a figure out the puzzle, figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Decode your environment. Yeah. So that is interesting. That's actually, I'd come up with a couple of types of fighting crime game styles, and that's actually one that I had not considered, possibly because it's kind of a bit peripheral, but the idea of figuring out the rules of a society or the environment that you're in, I mean, it could be like a hostile alien planet or something like that, but you try and determine the sets of rules that allow you to survive and flourish or accomplish your goals in that situation. The other ones that I come across is your basic forensic investigation, which is one I kind of did as a shtick for a number of years playing fantasy game. High fantasy, some of the characters were virtually superheroes because they've been run in the Dragon Quest system for long enough. But they were surrounded by your normal schmoes. Adventurer's Girl up on the hill in Seagate was full of a bunch of magically backed ass kickers. You know, some of these people are like, because they'd been going adventuring on different planes to the dreamscapes and the homes of gods and so forth. They're pretty dangerous people.
But apocalyptically powerful in some cases.
Yes, some of them are, you know, just frightening individuals. But you also had like a country and surrounding countries full of schmoes and, you know, the occasional things that, because they're not all apocalyptically powerful, there were different tiers of things they could get involved with. But I liked the idea of seeing what happened when you had them interacting with normal people, and particularly the city watch of the town that the Adventurers Guild was nearest, they have Seagate. And the idea that they had a number of watches, I think they were like gold, silver, and bronze. So I came up with the idea of the Black Watch, which was this unofficial bit where they drafted some guild members in, and they dealt with the problem that they had right now that no one actually on the watch had any idea about. So I had mad gods and people accidentally doing plays that were opening rifts in reality and similar sorts of crazy shit.
So, shenaniganry.
Shenaniganry. And the idea that a lot of them were effectively police procedural. One of the pivotal things about running a they fight crime or an investigation kind of game is that you have a set of rules in the world that allow you to get information or a set of, or amount of world building that you can say, A plus B equals C. Either it can be, you know, long-term world building, people are familiar with the setting, which was good for this sort of scenario, and you can just make logical conclusions based on that. But the other useful point that it had was an ability called Detect Aura, which a few of the colleges of magic have, basically allow you to ask a question of the universe. Living things have auras, dead things don't. Magical things have auras, they're a bit in between. But you could ask a rules question, pretty much, or a fact of existence about a specific thing. So you could say, when did magic last touch this? Or what spell was last cast on this? It was a very specific one piece of information question, but you could use it to discover certain things. And because the game has quite a long history and fairly well understood collection of colleges and magics and so forth, you can build quite a whole world and use that alongside the normal tropes of investigating a crime. I played pretty fast and loose with it. Because I'd been soaking in this sort of game setting for a decade and a bit, I was adapting the story and improvising huge chunks as we went. But having that framework means that, you know, a lot of people are at least vaguely familiar with the tropes of detective work. And alongside that, the tropes of the world, you can build a puzzle out of that. If it's something people aren't as familiar with, you can do that kind of alien world where you're discovering the rules. But if you're doing an investigation, you can work the way through pieces of a puzzle that you can put together.
Mm.
Another thought about the general they fight crime thing is that you can have really flawed protagonists, which is kind of cool. It's part
of the fun, one would argue.
Indeed, it's a kind of corollary to the fact that you get a little bit of moral high ground, and you can definitely, that was something that my lovely Dee pointed out when we were just discussing this earlier. You can also have morally ambiguous villains, you can have morally flawed protagonists, but because they're doing something worthwhile, there's a bit of leeway there. There's a little bit of an escape hatch.
Mm, that's true. I mean, thinking about the movie Red, all but one of the protagonists are, to one degree or other, horribly fucked up people.
Yeah, definitely. And,
you know, one of them is moonlighting as an assassin on the side. You know, the other one has retired from killing people for a living. And yet, because they are trying to do the right thing in this context, that's okay.
True. It's a good way to seek redemption, or you could have somebody coming back to fight their old organization, or to use the knowledge that the forbidden knowledge that they've gained to redeem themselves in some way. So that's one of the good things about that. If they're just like, I was a farmer, now I kill orcs for a living, maybe they've got a path to redemption. You can come up with something, but can be kind of baked in that way.
Mm.
Some of the tricks, as far as these sort of investigation games go, is that you have to watch yourself. Giving clues out is very important. You need to give the players hope. You also need to not deluge them in information that makes their brains implode.
I think historically I've been very bad at that step, because I have, many years ago now, I was running a fantasy game. Yeah, I was trying to go with hinting at big things that had occurred in the world and players might find interesting.
This isn't the storm thing, the lightning portal business where the players got totally the wrong idea and went hearing off.
No, that occurred sometime later after I'd learned my lesson. I mean, part of it, I think, was that the clues that I was laying down were not as obvious as I thought they were.
Yeah.
And secondly, that the players just weren't interested in that sort of game.
That's a worry, yes. Definitely, you need some buy-in. That's as part of the either having the backstory for the world or knowing about the tropes also implied, to some degree, giving a shit about the tropes.
Yeah. That, I think, was an issue that, at least with that particular fantasy game I was running, that I was sort of trying to put in stuff that would make the world deeper and richer, and to be honest, that just wasn't the sort of game that they were interested in. And so they just completely ignore. Well, they'd look at it, shrug, and then just move on.
Right. So all they were doing was wandering around looking for fights, basically.
They weren't looking for fights, but they sort of had a... It's a fantasy game. They had their mission to accomplish. They had their quest to fulfill, whatever. And this wasn't obviously immediately part of that quest to fulfill. So they just weren't that interested.
Yeah, there might be a higher level problem that they weren't playing the game that you were playing.
Very much so, but it took me as a GM a very long time to figure that one out. That, in fact, yeah, the players weren't interested in solving strange puzzles and weren't particularly keen on going and investigating shit because they just didn't care.
Fair enough. That's probably a higher order issue than we're looking at the moment, but yeah, definitely it's a good thing to look out for.
Not my players.
Oh yeah, well, every time. The other thing about if you're giving people information, there's... I've heard a little bit about the Gumshoe system. They do Trail of Cthulhu and a couple of other sorts of games where when you're doing a discovery kind of section, there'll be at least three opportunities to find information, and if you're able to do it the more difficult way, you pick it up earlier and you get more bonus information. A less spectacular result is still good. The third way, you get the information that you need to move on.
Okay.
There is no, well, I can't pick that lock. No one else can. I failed my attempt. I guess we're just sitting in this corridor until erosion lets us through or something.
Yeah, that'll work. We've got the time. Who brought the cards?
Yeah, so yes, until the door rots away, we're going nowhere in this adventure. Basically, the idea is, I think it's a rule of three, is basically you have different levels of information. It doesn't mean that it's inevitable that they're going to succeed. It's just that, well, to a degree, it means it's inevitable that the game is going to move forward, but it's inevitable that the game is going to move forward. You've got to accept that. This isn't cheating or hand-holding or anything. If you want the game to continue, these things happen. So that's one way of doing it, layering your clues. So the brilliant deduction or the players putting stuff together means that they get to do the slightly less ignominious way of getting the information, but make sure there's always... Yeah, never allow the game, either way that you handle it, never allow the game to get stuck up on one dice roll or one clue or one specific thing. It's just... If you bottleneck that and have a sort of a single point of failure there, it can be really dangerous to lock that sort of thing out.
Mm.
On the other hand, you can have a problem with just giving people too much information. And something that I would do was basically have sort of sets of clues that collapse. If you find enough pieces of information or you draw enough connections, a certain collection of the clues would basically say, this information points to this being the case. You can pretty much forget the rest, that little bubble of your investigation, because conclusion F has been reached. And you have it all basically correlate down to this is the important information we need to know. It's great for a sense of achievement. You've discovered something, you've used other information to confirm that, and then you just basically get to everything else, the other little bits get to fade away into the background. They can be important somewhere else, but mostly you can say, we've figured this thing out, we have made progress. Let's go and talk to the guy that this information is pointing to.
The Millennium's End system from, I don't even know if it's still being published, I think it was from Chameleon Eclectic, had a thing that they called clue trees, which is essentially almost a structure diagram of the plot, which I found when I was running that to be very useful for keeping the bits in order, just in terms of, this location will give them this piece of information. That piece of information connects to these other locations, where location is defined in a fairly woolly manner.
Yeah, Czechoslovakia.
Somebody's office, the internet, etc.
Okay, no, that sounds cool. Was it a leaves up or root up tree?
I'm trying to remember. I cannot remember.
I think it makes sense that it's leaves first, and then you go...
It tended to converge upon what was going on.
Yeah.
But it did mean that you could... your players could just completely bypass an enormous amount of things because they'd focused in on what was actually relevant.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you'd get the ones who would just roam wildly around the thing for ages, and as a GM you were despairing that they would ever actually pick a thing to continue investigating.
Well, it partially what I'm talking about is the idea is you have fact A and fact B equal fact C, and you've moved down the tree at this point. And then you fact C and fact D, E, F, and then it collapses down some more. So these things all lead into the center. It might not be sort of a vertical thing, but it might be like a mind map and sort of spreads out from the central conspiracy or the central secret. Because I tended to do it as a furious tap dance of making stuff up as things went along and because some of the systems that we were using were very logic-based, and I had philosophy doctorates, or people who were going for philosophy doctorates in the room, sometimes that led to contradiction.
Yes, it would.
That could be awkward. I managed to keep the soft shoe going around those sorts of things, maybe distracting them with, you know, shinies or arrow fire. But
it's always nice when you can distract the person going with for a philosophy doctorate with things to shoot at.
Yeah, it's a valid tactic. But yeah, that is probably an intimidating thing about for some folks, is that trying to... Sometimes you misspeak. Sometimes you can say, oh, but it's perfectly okay. So, sorry, I didn't catch that. Or I said something that may have misled you and take something back. Occasionally, witnesses forget stuff. Occasionally, bad people lie. Occasionally, you know, things turn up that it's not just fudging your plot, but make sure that to some degree, players are trusting enough to distrust things. It's like, yeah, they're trusting enough that some of the information is a bit dodgy. We need enough to be sure. Not, don't believe anything the GM is trying to trick us. Just that, nothing is certain until we've confirmed it a couple of different ways. So I suppose that's suicide, the contradiction of things. You've got to be careful not to contradict yourself overtly, but allow enough uncertainty to be in the mix so that they know. Check, was it? Trust but confirm, I think is the phrase.
You need a circumstance where your players are sufficiently trusting of the GM that they are not going to interpret the GM, one of the NPCs said something that proved to be untrue as the GM is lying to us. Because these are two different things.
Trust is important, that's for sure.
Okay. I had some thoughts regarding the whole they fight crime thing from a, I hate to say a meta level, but from a different point of view.
Sure.
And it was mostly just trying to imagine the sort of world, you know, if there is one world where all of these prompts come from, which kind of led me to the idea that possibly what you have is a world where the concept of a police force just never occurred. So you've got all these weird inhabitants and weird happenings, but they don't have police, and it's just accepted as it's the way things work, that when there is a problem, two people, or possibly more than two people, will team up to fight that problem. That's the way the world works.
Sounds like an objectivist wet dream to some degree.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I was thinking of it more from the comedic point of view.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if objectivism does particularly well.
Humor is bad for you. It is giving, I'm sure it gives benefits to undeserving people.
Mm.
It's not pure and self regarding enough a trait, I suspect.
Wow.
Also, you have to be completely devoid of irony, take anything Ayn Rand says.
Ooh, hate mail from Randians.
Hey, I count that as having made it somehow.
You have won in life if you're getting hate mail from Randians. No, that makes sense.
It's pretty just right. Oh, hey, we got to do something to get ratings.
Bringing the controversy.
Yeah. But no, that would be...
Socio-political and economic theory-wise. Oh, yeah. Wait, what?
But actually, in that world, I think there is a world like that. I believe it is in Tales of the Floating Vagabond.
Huh.
Because there is bugger all. There may be a trans-dimensional police force, but I would assume if they'd exist in that world, they would be very Keystone Cop-ish.
And somewhat overworked.
It's a very anarchic, freewheeling, pulpy adventure-style world anyway. But, yeah, to have two random people turn up and fight crime, yeah, that would be the place, especially if they come from such diverse backgrounds.
So you've got a completely chaotic... Yeah, okay. Well, you know, if you felt like running a Tales of the Floating Vagabond game at any point...
Well, they never supplied rules for that game for becoming sober, but they provided rules for that game for becoming drunk, which has always amused me. But, yeah, that could be done.
Something about a bartender is physically invulnerable as long as they're behind the bar? Or did I dream that?
It sounds like that game. If you can have a shtick, that means you can disbelieve technology because it's outside your understanding and have it stop functioning. Yeah, that sounds perfectly justified.
Nice.
There's lots of crazy stuff in that game. It is as cartoony and slapsticky as you like. I mean, I think they literally have space Nazis in it.
Gotta have space Nazis.
Yeah.
After all, the movie Iron Sky taught us that space Nazis are funny.
Not sure the movie Iron Sky has taught us anything.
Huh. They're making a sequel.
Yeah. How about
Hitler on a dinosaur?
Hitler on a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
A Nazi Tyrannosaurus Rex, because I think it gives a Sieg Heil.
Yeah.
Well, that one killed things.
Yeah. Yeah, I could respond to that at all. I have one final thing about they fighting crime.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go nuts.
The other thing is that, strictly speaking, where you are engaged in a pursuit, which conveniently enough can follow close on the heels of discovering the perpetrator of a crime, is also a similar sort of tracking and clue discovery sort of game. Except this one changes setting. That's extensible. You can add sections to it. You can have your villains leaving taunting notes or doing certain things to actually interact with the characters. Provided there isn't a technological means of just short-circuiting it. Technological or magical means of just jumping ahead and catching them. The players have to pursue the bad guys, figure out what their plan is, where they're going, and run them down.
Interesting. So very much follow that car.
Yep. And as long as it's a bigger scale than a foot race, so, you know, you can scale up. Like a Western setting, a fantasy setting, a sci-fi setting where there are limits to the speed of travel and so forth, provided that there is some point in there being a chase. But tracking people through a wilderness area or something like that can be another way of portraying that sort of pursuit and uncovering of clues. And it also means that you can have a bit of back and forth if there is some sort of communication means, even if it's like, I don't know, burning homesteads, if it's a particularly grim setting.
I'm also thinking of things like the various Cannonball Run films and
yep.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Exactly. The more you can the more the players can determine about the goals of the bad guys, the better they can anticipate what they're going to do, and they get that sweet opportunity to jump ahead or close the gap. It's like, if we ride all night, we can catch up with them at this point here and do this sort of dramatic thing. So that's another way of taking that kind of investigation game and getting changes of setting, changes of scenery, jurisdictional hijinks, all sorts of good stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, the big problem with that one is that you don't want someone to go scroll of teleport to blah, to short-circuit it, but also you don't want the bad guys to unfairly anticipate actions. You want to keep them. You don't want it to be easy, but you don't want it to feel like everything they do is being anticipated and thwarted before they get to.
So, competent and having made plans, but not foolproof.
And not maybe psychic.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to have a bit of a personality. Actually, the Lord of the Rings did this pretty interestingly. The orcs grab the hobbits, rush off in random direction. Elf, dwarf, and human. You can
walk
fill
into
in
a bar.
Nice. I was expecting you to fill in the names like a Tolkien nerd, but that's even better.
Oh, you mean Legolas, Gimli, and Aragorn.
And Aragorn, yeah, chase after them too. And, you know, they do their mighty runnings across the landscape and track things at certain points.
One of them running in a more mighty fashion because his legs are shorter.
Indeed. So, yeah, so that's the sort of way you can play out an investigation that isn't involving, you know, talking to people and checking crime scenes and so forth. But it's the same sort of game where you want to put clues. And even if, you know, the people you're pursuing are portrayed mostly as, you know, a terrible band of orcs and they will do these sorts of certain things, it's still a personality to some degree. It might be funnier if you have, like, Emmanuel Zorg sending you messages from wherever he is as he streaks ahead in space.
Emmanuel Zorg?
Bad guy from Fifth Element.
Oh, right, yes.
So
it's been so long since I've seen that film.
That's a classic. So having somebody actually taunting you via the Visi screen on your spaceship could be even funnier.
I have seen some stuff suggesting that Fifth Element is a film where the protagonist and the antagonist never meet and may not even be aware of each other's existence.
That would make my example a very poor choice. But I think you're right. It's entirely possible that that's hilarious. Okay, that was a terrible example, but I like the possibility that might happen in some alternate universe.
Finding helpful little notes left by the bad guy.
Yes, passive-aggressive post-it notes telling you, stop following me around. If we finally meet up, this will be very awkward for both of us.
Well, I have had in games good results from having charming, friendly, and outgoing bad guys, simply because the players hated them so much.
Yeah, especially if there's situations where they meet at the formal dinner or the ball for the local potentate or so forth, and they get to be charming and charming and charming, and the players just sort of grinding their teeth going, oh, I want to stab him.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they were doing, yeah.
that's a waste.
Kill him so much.
That's a waste of fun.
Indeed.
So that's the flip side from having, say, when you're doing the looking for the who commits the crimes, we have this anonymous entity that you're trying to find out more information about their methods and motives and so forth. The chase, you can have that personality in there, driving it along.
Yes, you already know who's committed the crime. What you have to do is catch them.
Lay your mitts on them.
Indeed.
So, anything else about fighting crime? What else is there that comes to mind?
I think I'm kind of tapped out on that one.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm tapped out on the fighting crime thing, other than that I think either Fate Accelerated or possibly GURPS using the quick character rules would probably be a good one for some of the they fight crime, just because you have to come up with some very weird characters.
Oh, the specific...
Yeah.
The generated...
Linking it right back to the randomly generated characters that...
It is very specific and from hugely mangled genres, so yeah, I can dig that.
Yeah, something that can handle horrifyingly mangled genre.
It's also the reason that Tales from the Fucking Vagabond just popped to the surface, because it's a genre blender to start with.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes...
Oh, shall we do the Forgotten Jontent?
Yes.
Yes, this is one for every pony, it's the singularity.
Oh good, we needed more of that.
There's a bit of it. John writes, I'm pretty sure this is about to be My Little Pony and the technological singularity, but I refuse. Instead, I'm thinking about mathematical singularities. For the uninitiated, a singularity is a discontinuity in a mathematical function. You have a parameter or set of parameters where if you approach them from one direction, you tend towards one value, and if you approach from a different one, you might get a different value. And the actual value of the function at the point in question will fail to match one of the, or all of the, or not exist at all, value. With a suggestion of linking to the Wikipedia page in the show notes.
Suggestion?
And so there's that, and then there's ponies. Right. The player characters are paranormal-ish investigators of the weird science subtype. Think Fringe. They're supposed to investigate strange occurrences at a local pony farm. Those exist, right? The players discover that in the large pen where the ponies graze, something has gone off. Everything looks normal, but if you, say, walk across the width of the pen at a constant speed, it takes longer going from north to south than it does walking south to north along the same path. Light will be measurably red or blue shifted when crossing the pen, depending on the direction. In the centre of the pen, one of the ponies lies dead, its right side crushed lengthwise while its left side is grotesquely elongated like a Salvador Dali painting. The centre of the field is the singularity itself. Not a gravitational one like a black hole, but a location where space just doesn't work correctly. Anything passing through an exact one-dimensional vertical line there will be unpredictably sheared, stretched, spaghettified, and or crushed. The farmer reports that three of his ponies have died that way in the past month, but he's pretty sure he has more ponies than he started with. At this point, game-wise, I'm going to suggest one of those very collaborative systems, because I have no idea where to actually go with this mystery. Might as well be able to steal ideas from the players and pretend that's what you intended all along. It could veer off into whatever genre the group wants. Aliens, mad science, time travel, Lovecraftian horror, Harry Potter fanfic, or whatever.
Right. So this is My Little Stalker.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This is Roadside Picnic with... ponies.
Yeah, my little roadside picnic pony. Oh, Jesus, that's bad.
That's amazing. So, you have an anomaly in the middle of the pony pen, which is generating badly photoshopped ponies and extra ponies.
Okay, so it's just the clone tool.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that's a thing. Well, yeah, I would honestly love to see where a party would go with that one. Just how do they investigate it? How do they approach the problem?
Does everyone get a pony?
Does everybody get, as it were, a pony?
Is this an artifact of having a field of a certain dimension with a certain number of ponies in it? Is it not space itself? Is the fact that you have horses in a pen at these dimensions? Is it something?
Yeah. It's a petting zoo. Yeah, it's a pony petting zoo or pony farm, pony ranch, or whatever, that is in... Yes, okay, I know how the scenario works now.
It could be cute that if they look like a scatter plot and you kind of have Shetland-sized ponies at one end and Clydesdale-sized ponies at the other.
Oh, nice.
It's like, okay.
I'm thinking that somebody has arranged, because you've got something that is a pony farm,
mm-hmm.
but there is also... Yeah, there is a convention centre nearby. So it's possibly one of these farm that's within an easy day trip from city. There is a convention centre. There is a brony convention going on. Part of the brony convention is the whole thing of there has been this trip organized as part of the convention to the pony farm, because ponies. As such, the collective nerdery has caused a space-time rift in this field, focusing on the ponies. That's what's happened here. It makes perfect sense.
I'm not sure how you would discover that apart from jumping to that heinous conclusion like you just did. So I don't think it's impossible. I just just not sure.
I don't know. Pony Ranch and a convention center. So you sort of got people investigating it. Meanwhile, people wearing sort of fake ears and headdresses and that sort of thing are busy setting up banners, which is a, wait a minute. You know, the ponies slowly start changing color and morphing in shape.
Yeah.
Did they get a little bit too Lovecraftian?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could find the right system, that sounds like the sort of setup that you could run multiple times with different people and end up with completely different answers.
Yeah, I don't know. It's also the possibility of being a horrific convention troll game where you set these guys up as a very serious, like, fringe outfit, and they're going to investigate this terrible thing at a stables. And yeah, they slowly start to realize, ah, shit, ponies.
It's actually a My Little Pony game in the disguise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that to anyone. That's just done. That's just uncool.
Sure, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Full disclosure. Also, I'm amused by the reference to Fringe because The Observer turns up a large number of the comics that they have produced alongside of the show. This grey pony in a suit, no mane, and a little hat.
That's pretty weird.
I like that one. It's disturbing as all hell. But, you know, the prompt was going to fall hard in the middle of disturbing as all hell territory. So.
Yeah. So standing at the corner of what the fuck and Maine, yeah.
Awesome.
Indeed. Well, do we have anything else? I'm kind of tapped out for ideas.
Well, I think we've mined this one for notions and hopefully help people run some police procedural or, you know, mage procedural, depending on your genre, games and fight crime, because it needs to be fought. Otherwise, what would we do?
Indeed. All right, in that case, shall we sign off at this point?
Indeed. We'll bid everyone a fond farewell. I hope you've enjoyed episode 43, They Fight Crime.
See you next time.
See ya.
Next time on The Big Red Couch.
Totally upside down, but I think it is Gravity Princess from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers of Montreal.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!